Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello, this is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington, in the heart of the Salish Sea, broadcasting live from the beehive of activity called the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon broadcast studio in the uptown core of bustling and bodacious Vachon town, and sweeping the airways of our bountiful and bucolic island community.
I think you've
trying to get a few
verdant.
More bees in there.
Oh, yeah.
I'm trying to get the bees.
That's true.
So that was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we, the Briefly, strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent, hopefully, discussions of current events laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. So let me introduce the Briefly panel. Our flight control board magician, retired Alaska Airlines captain, long tenured Vachon Airport commissioner, voice of Vachon board member, nearly reformed West Texan. We're working on it still.
You're working on it.
Eastern Montana raised, former Army intelligence specialist, and longest-serving Brown Briefly, Truman O'Brien.
I think that's the longest-serving introduction so far.
Record-setting.
We're working on it.
Record-setting. Absolutely.
There you go.
Well, yes, we're actually sort of struggling with the Click and Clack brothers to
exactly.
see if we can get the longest introduction.
Exactly.
Also, let me introduce our legal eagle. Or some call him our legal beagle, but yeah. It depends on what kind of... Yes, right. our mediator, two-time Fulbright scholar, former Washington State Assistant Attorney General, constitutional law professor, and former Pinkerton goon, Craig Bellis.
Happy to be here. But, you know, when you're kind of a 20-year-old and you need a job, you work...
You do.
I was doing the 16-hour shifts instead of back at the turn of the last century.
But at least you didn't have a face mask on.
That's true. That's true.
Yes. Also, missing today, unfortunately, is our part-time Politico, dedicated ferry fixer, Vachon Island Fire and Rescue Commissioner, 1448 star and executive director of Vachon Household, full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer. We're going to miss you today, Amy. She's on her way to a household conference in Seattle, so can't be here today. And the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, in addition to chairing the Equity, Social Justice, and Inclusion Committee, one of Donald Trump's favorite, of the Vachon Maury Island Community Council, mariner, backpacker, rower, electric vehicle owner, and indefatigable defender of democracy, Kevin Jones.
You know, I didn't realize that Equity Committee might qualify me for a nickname from the Donald.
Definitely.
Yeah, but I should consider that, see if I can strive for brilliance here.
Is that part of the DEI?
Yes. You're on the list, Kevin. You're definitely on the list.
I know. It's in my past. It's in my digital DNA. So it's only a matter of time now.
Exactly.
I'll wave to you as they haul me off the island.
and to consider you once had security clearance as a rocket scientist.
Can you believe it? Sometimes you just go bad.
I hear your dossier is about 5 or 6 inches thick.
Getting bigger every day.
And I am historian Bruce Holman, and
among many
other
things.
I was going to say, like, well, you know, what is that all about? You go on and on about the rest of us, and then you give us that little
history. It's called Slipping Under the Radar.
Heritage Museum, I think, executive director.
And today we have as our guest, maestro, Irish button, accordion champion, and Islander, John Whalen.
Yeah, and happy to be here. This is fun. I love this roundtable stuff here.
Hope it gets more fun.
Yeah, hopefully.
The fun has just begun.
You know where the door is.
Delighted, by the way, to be in living in paradise. So,
yeah, there you go.
Moved here in November of 2018, and the best move I made in my life so far, other than my three marriages.
We won't ask you.
That's the old question. What was the happiest and what was the second happiest day of your life? What was the third happiest, the fourth?
Well, you know, it's a funny thing because I've written tunes for both my ex-wives, and my wife Jan is at home right now working, and she said, when are you going to write me a tune? And I said, well, you know, honey, to be honest with you, I said, I can't afford it.
That's right, bad luck.
Do you have a ranking system?
Yeah. Well, right now, I'm ranking number one in this relationship. So
there
you go.
I'm good with that.
Don't refer to your wife as your current wife.
That's
anticipating something you might not want.
Right. Yeah. Definitely. So, let's check in and see what's gone on with people this past week. So, Truman, what's your week been like?
Well, I had a great week. I finished the annual inspection of the airplane, which is huge to get that out of the way. And I also finished my certified flight instructor renewal course, which I had to do online, and got the actual temporary in my pocket. So I'm very pleased about that. So mine was all aviation this week. That was it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Kevin, how about you? Busy weekend.
It's been kind of busy. This started this morning. Mm-hmm. I got off the water, 3 hours rowing, got wow. home, set the shower to defrost. And so I'm here now. So I'm good. Yeah. Good. Before the weekend, I had a chance to see Paula Poundstone at VCA, sold out. Would somebody on Vashon just give her a house?
They should.
We need to give her a house so she can be right here with us all the time. Awesome performer. And it's so amazing, you know, she talks about she has no memory, no recollection. She doesn't have an act. She doesn't have any of these things. But she weaves so many threads through from beginning to end. It's just phenomenal. If you didn't have a chance to see it, you'll have to see her next time. But you might be referring to the weekend of gathering here. A little small group of us, friends, got together at the four-way corner from 2 to 4 p.m. on Saturday, about 900. Wow. And it's about the number of folks that we expected. But it's even better than that. Free Range Freedom Choir, the Bucket Brigade of Indivisible Vashon, the Vashon Community Street Band, we're all there participating, entertaining, and raising a ruckus in a good way. One of the highlights was actually, as all the adults had their fun and they're packing everything up and heading for home, there's like five kids who were probably, I would definitely elementary school age, if that, with their signs and their chant. And so they had the stage, and it was awesome to see them there as well. So it was really good. The next thing up on that whole conversation, on the 8th of April at the Vashon United Methodist Church, 7 o'clock is our next monthly meeting, and we're going to have a panel of luminaries to talk about things going on in the world. So if stop on by, catch what Amy Dreyer and Jen Hrakovic and Bailey DeYoung and Laura Wyshek have to say about the state of things going on in the country on several topics. So it's just really a time to chat and kind of put our heads together based on what we're seeing and where we go next. So, and the next protest will be discussed there too. So hope folks can show up for that.
So is there a No Kings 4 in the offing?
You know, I wish I could say that there won't need to be one because we'll have dispatched, you know, the motive for that, but I'm certain there will be. But I can tell you right now, May Day's strong, May 1st, First Friday as well. Is the next thing, and we're not sure. Tonight actually is the protest planning team gets together, so we'll put our heads together on what kind of soup we can cook up from all those ingredients. May Day, First Friday, May Day Strong, Indivisible Vashon, and others. See what happens. Stay tuned.
Exciting, exciting. John, what's your week been like?
Well, it was. It's an interesting time for me, actually, because St. Patrick's Week. I'm very, very busy we did the thing at the Snapdragon and the Celtic Festival there, and then I ended up going to New York, and of course, as a lot of islanders, we got hit with the no power after the snowstorm, so we had the gig on Saturday here. Sunday I was in Portland, Oregon, and then Monday we flew to New York, but we had no power, hadn't come on. So we had to leave the house wondering if we would have to, you know, get buckets for the freezer and stuff and throw everything out. But fortunately, it came on Monday. Everything was okay. But we had a great time. We had a nice time here. I love playing with Mark Graham. You know, I think Mark is probably my best friend on the island, and Karen Dale. And we always have a lot of fun together. And then, I've been doing this gig in New York for 15 years. And it's actually called Sober St. Patrick's. And it's trying to change, the attitude that all Irish are drunks. In fact, my father never drank in his life, and my grandfather never drank in his life. Unfortunately, I drank enough for both of them. but I don't drink much anymore.
I was wondering how you're going to pull out of that defeating the myth. I see. That's good. That's
well, I've
nice.
Turned the corner, so now I think I'm okay with doing the awesome. Sober St. Patrick's. And it's really not just for the Irish community, but also for the recovery community. And we have a lot of guests. This year, we actually, for the first time, we performed at the Ukrainian Institute of America on Fifth Avenue. It was a Gilded Age mansion. And it was a fabulous event, and I think we're going to be there for a while now. And it went very, very well. And we actually incorporated, I'm the music director for the program, and we incorporated some Ukrainian dances and Irish dances together.
Wow.
And they actually danced together. And that was a lot of fun, you know.
Wow.
But it's a beautiful building and a really wonderful cross-cultural event of, two groups of people that have been dominated by other countries in their history, you know. And then unfortunately, the sad part for me is that the latter end of March is a difficult time. My father unfortunately passed away 2020 COVID in the Philippines.
Yeah.
And my mother passed away yesterday, in 2007. Her anniversary was yesterday, but she was 66. So, and then I just found out yesterday that one of the greats in traditional Irish music passed away 2 days ago. It was a guy called Richard Dwyer, and the Dwyer family are just legendary in the Irish music world with their compositions and performances. So, it's a kind of a bittersweet month for me now, But, we all have our memories, right? So you get to this stage of a life and you look back on all the good things, you know.
Exactly.
You're a youngster. Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Greg, how was your week?
Well, you know, Truman and I were celebrating our fifth anniversary of our airplane crash here.
Is this your first or second marriage?
I celebrated it by crawling around on the concrete while we were working on our annual on the plane, taking it apart and putting it back together again. But my week was not all airplane. I mean, I had some other issues with family members who needed to go to the hospital a couple of times, but everything turned out great there. It was on Friday. The Coop had its last Friday show that Steve Amston puts on at the station across the street, down the road here a little bit. And the theme was performances that involve numbers, numbers in the title, numbers in the lyrics, you know. And I had to represent something from the last century, of course, because everybody else was after 2000 and in the current century, you know. So I sang 16 Tons.
Great.
Which
one of my favorites
too, yeah. Obviously. That's why I picked it. And it was great fun. It was a great show. And my performance was wonderful, at least from this side of the of the microphone. And then I went to Hadestown at Vashon High School. Wow. Just wow. Those students are unbelievable. That was, I thought Ride the, what the heck was the name of the play? Oh, shoot, I forgot. You know, Ride the roller coaster. That's not the name of it, but the Cyclone, Ride the Cyclone, the play they put on it, I think it was a year ago, was great. But this one, Hadestown, was extraordinary.
Wow.
And I just want to, you know, applaud the work that was done by everybody putting that play together. And every seat was taken, I think, for every show.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, it was packed.
You know, so. My wife and I saw Hadestown on Broadway in New York 2 years ago, I think. Yeah, really an amazing
play. I'll bet these guys rivaled it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I swear, they were extraordinary.
Great.
So that was my week.
Wow. Exciting weeks.
Yeah.
My week was pretty quiet. I mean, definitely the Saturday, up here for the No Kings was just very impressive to see the community come out like that. And the range, Kevin sort of referred to it a little bit, but everything from kids and sort of grammar school kids up to some of my older friends who I would never have thought I would see at a protest. And they showed up with signs, and it's sort of like, wow. I mean, the depth of sort of discontent right now with this current administration is really impressive. And we live in a bubble here on Vashon, definitely. But still, the fact that relatively conservative, traditional, sort of islanders are turning up for these kind of protests tells me that there's something very deep going on in our society right now, and it's frankly inspiring. So that was sort of the highlight for me, and then all the normal stuff. You know, when the weather starts getting better, even though it's cold in the morning still. But, you know, sitting out sanding furniture, deck furniture yesterday in the sun, it just felt like, wow. I mean, there's hope in this world. So sort of just a normal spring week for me. But looking forward to the family getting together this weekend for Easter. Always a big turnout in our family. So all the kids are coming together, the grandkids. So it'll be a good weekend. So let me jump into sort of what's going on in history a little bit, and then we'll get to talking to John about the button accordion and all kinds of Irish music things. But today is March 31st, and it's Crayola Day, or Crown Day, which is interesting to me. We all grew up with Crayola crowns, right? You know, and drawing with them. How many of you guys actually ate one?
Never.
Chewed them. And listeners, how many of you have not chewed a Crayola at some point in your life,
Aren't
right?
Are you going to ask us for our favorite color?
Of course. John, what's your favorite color?
Well, it would have to be green.
Green.
Well, yeah.
Of course, right.
Of course.
Several to choose from in the big box.
The big box.
Well, all of them.
Craig, how about you?
Burnt sienna.
Burnt sienna.
They were going to do away with burnt sienna here several years ago, and there was an uproar.
Of course.
And people came out and said, no, they cannot, and they kept it.
So. Yep. Right. Did you write them a letter?
No, I didn't. I sent them bad vibes if they were going to do it.
Truman, out of a whole box.
I've always been partial to blue, so that was my color, for sure.
Well, if they had an aqua shade, I would go for that. And they may have an appropriate name for one, but that's my shade.
I was always fascinated by the white ones, though, because it's like, where am I going to use this?
Right.
I was thinking they should have like a vanilla, eating them.
I was always fascinated by the flesh colored one.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Just sort of assumed that everybody in the world was white.
Exactly.
It's sort of light pinkish.
Glad you clarified that.
So
I was beginning to wonder what kind of radio show I came to.
Oh, my goodness.
No DEI here.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, definitely not. No. And today was also, has been in the past up until just recently, Cesar Chavez Day, but certain sort of disclosures about his past. It's there's a massive sort of
tarnish that
a little bit of tarnished reputation, and sort of like people are scrambling to sort of rename the day and rename avenues and boulevards and things like that.
You know what gets me though is that you got to respect what the guy accomplished. Sure. I mean, so the guy himself. We're really looking at his accomplishments, not the man, I mean, I would think. So I kind of feel bad about
careful,
that.
We have to apply that same test to other individuals as well.
But I think that's quite all right. Yeah.
As a historian, it's always that sort of, it's always that issue of how do you make that separation between the human being, the person, you know, and their accomplishments. Yeah. And, you know, Jefferson is a great example of it. And there's lots of examples. And it's always a problematic sort of issue to deal with.
Yep.
But today...
Like Attila the Hun.
Yes, right. Yes. Good old Attila.
That's H-U-N, not H-O-N, right? Yeah, okay. Right.
Depends.
Yeah, it depends on who's saying
right,
it.
Right, yes, right, yeah. So, today in history, in 1685, Johann Sebastian Bach was born, which I thought was interesting. In 1774, Britain passed the Boston Port Act in response to the Boston Tea Party that essentially closed the Port of Boston and sort of was part of one of a series of events that ultimately led to the American Revolution. Mm-hmm. 1889, the Eiffel Tower opened. 1943, Oklahoma, the play, musical, premiered on Broadway. Hmm. And in 1985, the very first WrestleMania took place. Yeah. And I guess we're going to get another one on the White House lawn July 4th.
Is that WrestleMania or is that MMA?
The descendant of WrestleMania, MMA, if you will.
Mm-hmm. We'll find some alternate programming for that, I suspect.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. So enough of history. Let's talk to John about music. So, John, just... take a few minutes and tell us and your listeners a little bit about yourself, about growing up in an Irish household outside of London, how you got involved in Irish music, your career, I mean, and ultimately, how did you get to Vashon? So lots of things on that list.
Yeah, I'll try and keep it short. So both my parents were immigrants, ended up going to England for work. My father was 16, I think, when he went to England. My mother was, 17 when she went to England. They met in a coffee shop in London. The large Irish population, huge Irish population in Britain. And at the town I grew up in, or the town next to where I grew up in, Luton Town, which has third largest airport in Britain, we had about 35,000 people in the early 50s. And so there was a lot of immigrants there that wanted their kids to get involved with the music. And my father loved the accordion. And the opportunity came up that he got one, and it was 1970. And I started playing in February of 1970, and I kind of took to it right away, and ended up 3 years later, 4 years later, recording my first record in Ireland. The community of Irish music it has sessions all over the world. And there isn't anywhere that you go that you wouldn't find an Irish session. And my wife and I travel a lot. We were in Galicia, and there was a session there we played. We went to a session in Madrid. And the national championships of I'm digressing a little bit here, but I think it's important information. The national championships of Irish music, which I've won 7 times in my life.
Only seven times.
Only seven, yeah. But my they host it in small little towns around Ireland, and generally each town hosts it a couple of years at a time. And this past year, the last 2 years was in County Wexford, where my father's from, and they had 750,000 people.
Whoa!
When I went to the national championship in 1973, there were 25,000 people.
Yeah.
So to give you an idea of how Irish music has really taken off around the world, and people from all over the world competing. We had a, they have a Cayley band competition, and we had a Cayley band competing from Japan.
Whoa.
We had a Cayley band competing from Australia with a didgeridoo. Yeah. And this would have been unheard of when I started playing.
Yeah, you know, the didgeridoo in Doolin, you know, Doolin, there's, that's a super hotbed of Irish music. My daughter was there a few years ago, and there was a band there that had a didgeridoo.
Yeah.
And she said it really worked.
I think it might have been Steve Cooney.
Could have been.
Because Steve Cooney's great, and he's from Australia, great guitar player.
Yeah.
Very renowned. But I do know that he plays the didgeridoo, but it could have been somebody else. But
it's amazing that that fits so. You know.
Well, yeah. I mean, the didgeridoo is a drone instrument, and so very connected to the Irish pipes and Scottish pipes and that drone sort of background. And I bet you can do a lot more with a didgeridoo.
Right.
That's
right.
Amazing. Yeah.
So anyway, I ended up doing a music tour through an organization called Cultus Celtorum, which is ostensibly the Irish Musicians Association. And they did an annual tour, and I did that tour in 1979. And we did 33 shows in 35 days across North America and Canada.
Wow.
And, of course, I saw a lot, but I didn't see anything at the same time, you know, hopping on and off planes and buses. And so we... that tour is set up in a way that you have host families. And the host family in New Jersey invited me back. And so I took them up on that opportunity, and I came back in April 4th, 1980, and ended up staying. I've been here ever since. And then lived in Connecticut for a number of years. As I said, I married a couple of times, and I lived in Connecticut, raised my boys. In fact, very proud that my oldest son, Dennis, has got a Fulbright scholarship and went to Madrid for a year.
That's a good assignment, Madrid.
He absolutely loves Madrid. Even though he's a math guy, he's a data scientist, he's actually multilingual as well. Mm. But anyway, so we ended up, I'm trying to keep this short. So we ended up...
We got 30 minutes to go. Okay. So, keep rolling.
Yeah. So, it was interesting when I first got here. There were a bunch of musicians that I knew already, because we would meet at the national championships in Ireland. Sure. And so Brian Conway is an example that we've had here on the island to perform. We met at the All Ireland Championships, and then we've been friends ever since, and we still play together since 1972. We've had Brian out here a couple of times. But anyway, knowing all these people, I got into the community in New York, and I was kind of fairly well known because I'd already recorded my first album, and a lot of people had my record when I got here, which was kind of surprising to me. You know, I was so young. I didn't. You know, anyway, 20 years old, I raised my two boys. So I've got one in Charlotte, North Carolina. And like a lot of us now, I'm going to be a grandfather for the third time coming up in May, which is all exciting. And my youngest son's a lawyer in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hmm.
And so I ended up doing a workshop in Arizona, and my wife, Jane, was my student at the workshop I did in a place called Portal, Arizona, in the middle of nowhere. A fantastic place. And
little tiny portal?
Little tiny portal.
Right by the canyon there.
Yep.
Whoa, that's a great spot.
Amazing place.
Yeah.
Amazing. And so we ended up staying in touch, and she said, would you like to do a tour of the Northwest? And I said, sure. I haven't toured here in a while. And so she booked me a tour. And it was good, great tour. And then she said, you want to do it again next year? And I said, sure, this tour was really good. And because I was single, and she said, well, you know, maybe next year we could kind of add on a few days and maybe go to Yellowstone. Because I had spent my whole life, like a lot of people in business, traveling and never seeing anything. Mm-hmm. You know, you're driving past the Grand Canyon, you know, you're bypassing Yellowstone. And so I said, that'd be great, you know, and that really was the beginning. Mm-hmm. And I finally ended up, I said, well, you know, my kids don't come home from college anymore. I'm sitting in Milford, Connecticut, waiting for something to happen, and nothing's happening.
And so, it happened.
And, yeah, so I said, well, I'll move to Seattle. You know? And so she had a house in West Seattle, and I'm not a city boy. You know, I don't like the city. I used to spend all my summers in Ireland on the farm, family farm. And we actually came out. She said, excuse me, I was actually looking at property in York, Pennsylvania. And you could buy really cheap property in York, Pennsylvania. And I'm a carpenter by trade, so I could do a fixer-upper for very little money after two divorces. So she was not happy about that idea at all. And so said, you want to go see Kat Eggleston on Vashon? She's doing a house concert. And I knew Kat's name, but we had never met. Because she'd played with some of my peers in Chicago when she was in Chicago. And so I said, sure, we'll do that. It was on Vashon Island. I said, I don't know where Vashon is, you know. So we got off the ferry and we're driving up the hill. And I said, wow, this is like Ireland, except the trees are taller and there's more of them.
Yeah.
You know. And so she said, well, what if we moved here? And you wouldn't have to, I wouldn't have to leave the Northwest, and you would get the room that you want and the workshop that you want and a place to put your tools and stuff. And I said, that's fine. So we bought a house that November and moved in.
What year was that?
2018, November 2018.
Okay.
And we're on the south end of the island. And by the way, you're all welcome. And people listening to it, if they want to come, we have a big jamboree at the house every year. So the 6th of June, we've got several hundred people coming, musicians from all over Arizona and New York, and
wow, that's great.
Different
we'll
places.
Be over for dinner tonight.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, we have food. We barbecue. And, you know, so that's a lot of fun. But I just absolutely love it here. In fact, excuse me, my wife says calls it John's Vashon Ireland.
That's good.
That's very good. That's very good.
So where are you on the island exactly?
Down we're near on the
Spring,
south end.
Near Spring
off
Beach?
Spring Beach, yeah, off of 280.
Yeah. Right.
You know, 137th Ave, off of 280. So, and like I said, we're going to have, last year was our third or fourth, and then we ended up having people camp out. You know, we have 2.5 acres there. So I think this year we're going to have some other people with RVs coming, and it's a little Celt stock. You know,
mm-hmm.
and I think last year we had about 60 musicians.
Wow! Ooh,
and all different instruments, and it's a lot of fun. You know, that we just spend a day, and then people stay over, like I said, and then we do a big breakfast in the morning. And
fabulous!
It's just a lot of fun, and you know, we continue to try and you know, help the Irish music community here on the island by bringing in other artists. And
that's great.
I'm kind of digressing a little bit of the conversation, but
so you know, John, let me ask you a little bit about as a kid growing up in an Irish household. You know, if your dad got this button accordion, did you play any other instruments, and how did you get into that sort of the Irish music outside of the family?
Well, the music has been in my family, on my father's side. Anyway, my God rest her soul, my mother. I love my mother dearly, but she was tone deaf. but my great grandfather played what we called the melodeon, which was a single row button accordion. I played the Irish style two row button accordion. But my father just loved the music, and he wasn't like I said, he didn't drink. So long before I ever started playing, my father had a bunch of friends of his that moved from his village to Luton. So Luton seemed to be a place to go for a lot of the people that we knew. And so he would end up being the designated driver and bringing him into London, which was a long way back then. You know, London's not that bad right now, but back then it was a long way to go. And so he would, they'd end up at our house, and I was maybe five, six, seven years old. Sorry, my ringer's going off. I should.
That's never happened.
Yeah, it never happened.
That's right. That's right.
You know, that actually happens to me on stage once in a while, and I've actually answered the phone if it was one of my sons, because you just never know. You kind of like, if I don't answer it and something happened, I'd never forgive myself.
Exactly.
Anyway, so so where was I now? Oh yes. So my father got this accordion, which was really cheap, you know, because we were dirt poor, you know, and this guy Brendan Mulcair came to Luton from London to teach, but we would have these, that's where I was, we have these sessions at our house. My mother would get up out of bed, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, make sandwiches, and we'd have drums, trumpet. You know, muted stuff, and singers, and very, very little traditional Irish music, but a lot of the show band, like the westernized Irish music at the time, you know. And so I was fed all that stuff. And I think for me, the bigger impact I had was, you know, going to Ireland every year of my life from the year, time I was 4 months old, and going to my great-grandmother's thatch cottage that had clay floor, no running water, no outhouse even. So we would have to go to the well to get the water. We'd go pick mushrooms, we'd go pick blackberries on the bushes along the road. My great-grandmother was a great character, and I loved her dearly, but I would sit there. We had a big, big open fire, and with a bellows, a hand bellows. I'd sit there and turn the bellows, and I'd be falling asleep, and somebody would be telling a joke, or somebody else would tell a story, and then somebody else would pull out a comb with a piece of paper and start playing music, a juice harp, or no instrument. Nobody had money for instruments, you know? And that was a huge impression on me as far as the country of Ireland and the people before I ever started playing music. And I just absolutely love it.
So I have I really am interested in accents, and I love trying to determine where people are from. And I have to tell you, you have got the oddest collection of accents of in a number of people that I've ever met. I can hear occasionally an Irish pronunciation of a word, or I hear New York occasionally. Oh,
yeah. Big, strong New York,
yeah. Yeah, and I hear a little bit of Midwest. It's crazy. I mean, I've really enjoyed.
What you don't hear is what I used to sound like. You know, when I came to America, and I talked like this, you know.
Yeah,
what I mean?
A little,
you know?
Cockney.
Yeah, yeah. I was born in London, you know, so this is why I talked. And there's an interesting story behind that. I went back to England for the first time in 83. I moved here in 80, so it was my first trip home, and I had an interview with the Irish Post, which was a national newspaper in Britain for the Irish. Millions of copies sold every year, or every week. And so the editor said to me, he said, and this is only 3 years, he says, you know, he says, you don't really have your English accent anymore, you know. And I don't say this to offend anybody, it's just the way I grew up. And I said, well, you, let me put it to you this way. If I had an Irish accent, I'd still have it.
Yeah, there you go. No, I'm sorry, but I find that absolutely fascinating.
Well, I worked in Manhattan for years as a carpenter.
Yeah.
And I had a double life. I worked full-time in the music. I worked 4 or 5 nights a week, and I worked every day.
Wow.
And I'd get up at 4 in the morning and take the train in from Connecticut. Mm-hmm. And I've worked on everything from Rockefeller Center to the World Trade Centers and all over Manhattan doing high-end finish work. And thank God I'm retired now. So
that's amazing. So the other question that Bruce came up with is, so you started with that traditional Irish music with the comb and the juice harp and all. How is the this Irish tradition translated over time?
Has it changed?
Dramatically, yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. How would you describe that, or could you?
Well, I was brought up in a very pure Irish household, mm-hmm. so there wasn't really any other kind of music allowed in our house. So it was fairly narrow focused, mm-hmm. But a lot of my peers, a lot of my friends were, I came here, they went to Ireland, some people went to Australia and various different countries. And I had no clue about American music until I got here. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know anything about bluegrass. I didn't even know anything about Southern Rock and Lynyrd Skynyrd and The Doors and
sure.
I didn't even know anything about Led Zeppelin and all that kind of stuff, you know. I mean, I heard The Beatles, of course, you know.
Yeah, but,
so that really opened the door for me to start thinking about crossing over but maintaining the essence of the music, but being challenged enough to create something that other people would like to hear, you know.
So are we at a point where we should play this?
Yeah, I can, sure. Yeah.
You want to explain what we're going to hear? It's the number two on the...
Yes, number two. You want me to talk about it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Kips Bay Cayley Band was a rock band that I played with, lots of rock bands didn't really come in until the late 90s into the festival world and the music festivals across the country. So we were early, and so we got some work, but we didn't get enough work to stay together. And by the time we were really good, everybody hated each other in the band. We like a lot of bands, we broke up.
It happens.
But the drummer in this band was a guy called Steve Missile, and he did the White Wedding album with Billy Idol. Right. He mm-hmm. played with Ted Nugent. Mm-hmm. Pat Kilbride was from Carlo, who played acoustic electric guitar and cittern. Richard Lindsay was a six-string electric bass player from L.A., and myself on the accordion. And we got together, and Pat actually put the band together, and he called it Kips Bay. And Kips Bay is an area of New York, and on the east side of the village, going towards the village area. And so you've got the West, the Kips Bay Boys Club, you've got the Kips Bay Laundromat and the places like that. And because the pun is, there are no Cayley bands in Kips Bay. So we call it the Kips Bay Cayley Band. And so we ended up, we got a record deal with Greenland Records, and we did a couple of albums. This is an album where we did a cover version. Steve Missile suggested this song, and we all really liked it. And so this is our cover version of the Battle of New Orleans.
All right, here we go.
Jump! was saw the faces well. Opened up a squirrel guns and really gave them a whirl. Fired our guns and the British kept coming. Wasn't as many as it was a while ago. Fired that small and they began to run it. Down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico. Ran to the bars and they ran to the rebels. Ran to the marshes where a rabbit wouldn't go. Ran so fast that a house couldn't catch them. Down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
That a lot.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, it sounds like you guys are having a blast.
You know, we had a great time, and we actually recorded this in a place called the Waterfront, which is where Lenny Kravitz did his first big hit record.
Yeah.
Was at the Waterfront, and the controls in the studio at the Waterfront. We didn't have the main engineer, unfortunately, but we had the room, and they had the stuff that the Beatles the mixing board that the Beatles used.
Oh, my God.
They had bought that, and they brought it to the water.
Wow.
But the guy that produced this was John Simon. Mm. And John Simon was my ex-wife's mother of my children's first cousin.
Oh.
And I got to meet John, of course, through family. And then I realized John produced the first two band albums and the first Deep Purple album, Blood, Sweat, and Tears album. There's actually an interesting story because we were on Green Atlantic Records, and back then Green Atlantic Records was the number one record label in the world for traditional Irish music. So we had to negotiate a deal, and so we ended up going up to a place called Tommy Makem's Irish Pavilion, which is unfortunately not there anymore, on 57th Street in New York, and a representative for Green Atlantic came, who happened to be Steve Katz. And John Simon produced Blood, Sweat, and Tears' first album. Yeah. So but they hadn't seen each other in over 25 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, gee.
And so here we are sitting at a table with two icons of rock and roll negotiating a contract for an Irish band on an Irish record label in Midtown New York.
That's perfect. You know?
And, but anyway, it all came out good. And I never forget John got frustrated with the young engineer we had because it was all 2-inch tape. And so he was trying to do an edit, but digital type edit, and he couldn't seem to get it. And John said, "Just go away for a few minutes." And he took the tape and he did it by hand, and he spliced the tape and did that. It was amazing just watching him work doing splicing. Mm. He'd done it so much. That was the way they did it back in the day.
Sure, you know? Sure.
Wow.
And, wow.
You know, after listening to that that song, I am curious. You play the button accordion.
I do.
It's sometimes referred to as a box.
Yeah, well, we always call it the box.
The box. And how does the button accordion differ from, for example, a big Italian
piano accordion?
Big, heavy accordion.
So the piano accordion is what they call chromatic. Mm-hmm. So you have bellows direction is the same either way, whether you're pushing or pulling. So right. you hit the piano key on the accordion. The button accordion is, excuse me, I should have brought some water. The button accordion actually is what they call diatonic.
Oh.
And so it's a push-pull system, just like Mark Graham was with the harmonica.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we have reed blocks inside the accordion, and you hit the button and you push, you get one sound, and you pull, you get another sound. And so it's more complicated to learn, and it's a little easier to play the reels and the jigs and the fast stuff on the button accordion, because the piano accordion is so vast, your fingering has to be really, really good.
Is the accordion keyed? Does it have a key,
no.
Or can you change the key as you're...
Well, it's what they call a I have a BC system, so there's different systems, and so I can play in any key. Some keys are harder than others, of course, you know, so, you know, in the BC system, you try and stay away from B flats and E's and that kind of stuff, but like D, G, A minor, E minor, G minor are all very fairly simple to do on the button accordion.
How are the notes? So you hit one button, you go one direction, you go the other. What is the difference between what tone difference, like one or two notes or...
So it's actually structured fairly well. That's a good question because I'm not taught by theory, and I'm not sure I would be able to explain the steps, the half steps of tone.
Yeah, no. If I
hit a low C and push, so there's on the inside row, which is the white keys, mm-hmm. right? There's three notes on the push, just different octaves. So you've got C, E, and G. On the push.
Right.
And then pull your F, A, B, D.
Ah.
So okay. F natural, that is. And then on the outside row is all the black nut keys, the incidentals, the B flats and the A flats and A sharps or whatever, you know, C sharp, D and F sharp. So there's a lot of very little moving from inside row to outside row, unless you're playing, you know, D or A, you know. A has three sharps.
But then you have buttons on the other hand as well, don't
and
you?
On the left side. But the reality is on my style of accordion, mm-hmm. I've got eight bass notes.
Oh.
And so you're very, very limited to the chordal progressions that you can do on. Now, a lot of accordions progressed over the years, and there are accordion players more into that kind of stuff than I am, and so they'll put 12 bass on there, or, you know, 16 bass or whatever.
Wow.
You know, my way to counteract that is, you know, if I'm using a guitar player and a bass player, I don't need my bass notes. You know?
Oh, sure.
Now the accordion is lighter than the big piano.
Oh yeah.
And which is fitting for a lot of Irish music, is it not? Because you got to move quickly, have sharp notes.
Well, the interesting, I know I tell this story because now I'm going to be 67 in June, but you know the interesting part is, I started off with a big, relatively big button accordion wise, on a 9-coupler Palo Soprani, which is a big, heavy instrument and covered most of my body when I was a kid. And then as I've gotten older and they've refined and different accordion makers get into the Irish style of playing, they build the accordions. And so, you know, the accordions are getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And I always say, well, they're still getting heavier and heavier and heavier because I'm getting older. but I play a Mengoshini from Italy. And I love it. And I still have my old original accordion.
So before we get too far gone, should we hear this Jigs and Reels?
Let's do Trip to Sky, if that's okay. It's a very different kind of piece. It's track 7.
Okay, and that's on this one?
Yeah. I'm sorry to change things up on
that's
you.
Okay.
I don't know how much time we have left, but...
We've got about
7-8 minutes.
Yeah, so this is an important piece in my life history.
Okay.
It's a tune called Trip to Sky.
Okay, here we go.
Oh, no, that's good. Interesting. That was a set of jigs that we were playing, and all these tunes are.
That's fairly traditional.
Oh, that's very traditional. Right. Yeah, and in fact, this the first jig is a jig I wrote for one of my students from Warwick, New York, who ended up going back to Ireland and winning the under-18 button accordion championship. So I've had five accordion players from North America win the national championship.
Wow.
I've been teaching for 55 years, you know. I love it. But anyway, so that tune has actually been recorded and picked up and is now part of the cycle of tunes. When I went to Ireland, people started playing it, and you know, didn't realize
this
it was
the one that we just heard.
Yeah, didn't realize it was mine. You know,
my gosh.
And so bands in Ireland have actually recorded. I mean, I wrote a Jewish polka. I call it a Jewish polka, but my ex-wife was Jewish, and it ended up a band called Bioga recorded it, and they ended up on the new documentary with Ed Sheeran.
Oh yeah,
playing. Anyway, this next track is a track I wrote after a trip to the beautiful Isle of Skye.
Okay, and, here we go.
I told you I talked to her.
Tell us about that music and the scene it was in.
Well, Trip to Skye was a tune that I wrote for a recording I did with Eileen Ivers, who was the original fiddle player with Riverdance. And it ended up being picked up by many, many people around the world, and music bands around the world, and used in television. It was used in the third season of Sex and the City. This is my own version of the tune, not the original. The first recording I did, but this was a later on a solo record I recorded this the way I wanted it. And so I've been blessed. I've been very lucky. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah. So tell us about the scene that this was
used. Oh, yeah. So this on the third season of Sex and the City is a scene where Charlotte is fantasizing about the gardener in the garden. She's washing dishes, looking out at the gardener. Oh. And there's no dialogue, so it's great for me because the royalties are higher and I get paid more money. So
that's always a good thing for
it
a
is
musician.
A good thing.
Yeah, right. Hey, we're just about out of time. We really appreciate you coming, John.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We need to have you back so we can continue this conversation.
There's a lot to tell.
There are always, right. So we next week, Amy will be hosting. And then for Truman, for Kevin, for Craig, Amy, who is not here, and John, I'm Bruce. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next week on The Brown Briefly.
Okay, we're there.
Sorry.
Oh, thank you, guys.
No worries. Hey, man, this is great.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, there is that cliche about Irishmen drinking.